Hey, you listen to this podcast. Go to myplayvolution.com, click the Amazon icon, bookmark that page, and use it every time you shop on Amazon. It's a way for you to support the show without costing you anything. And it's a win-win-win. Amazon wins because you buy their stuff, and you win because you get stuff. And we win because we get a few pennies per purchase. Win-win-win. What could be better? Come on, do it. Please? Explorations Early Learning has been producing low-tech, high-think toys for years. Check out our yummy wooden delights at explorationsearlylearning.com under the Shop tab. And think about joining the Toy of the Month Club. For a reasonable monthly fee, we ship you a sweet, sweet box of play.
Here's Jeff Hart at work.
Welcome to another episode of the Child Care Bar and Grill Podcast. I am Jeff Johnson Robot here with Lisa Murphy and Tasha Johnson. How are you ladies doing today?
I am doing fine. How are you, Tasha?
Just fine.
We and have oh go ahead, talk some more like a robot. They replaced themselves with us so they could go have cocktails on the deck while we recorded the show. It took a while to build us in an extinct volcano in the South Pacific, but now the show will be continue to be brought to you by us robots.
Robot.
Beep,
beep, beep, beep.
That was a spoof. That was a spoof. We were goofing around. That was just a little caper we did on y'all.
We trick you?
We're not.
We tricked them.
We're not really robots. Oh, I'd love to be a robot. I'd love to have I'd love to be downloaded into like R2-D2.
Downroaded? What the hell is that?
I'd like to be downroaded into Scooby-Doo.
Downroaded.
All right. So today we're going to start a new series on physical environments. We're calling it the physical environment series because it's kind of literal that way. We've been asked about, what our ideal setups for different places in an early learning program would be. And so we're going to start doing that. We're going to start out with block play, mostly because Lisa. Because
it's my favorite.
And I'm kind of a block fan, too. So the whole idea is we'll spend some time talking about if we were setting up a space, what we would put in it and how we'd set it up, I guess, is where we're going to go. And as time
Jeff had
goes
to explain
by,
this to me, because I thought the request from the listeners was like taking you actually on a physical tour of like a classroom and like, you know, and the cubbies would be 15 feet by 5 feet. And so when he explained it to me a few minutes ago that we're going to go through like center by center and like, and I'll be like, oh, so I'm like, I'm a lot calmer now.
Our little T-Rex arms were going like crazy before with stress, but now we're okay. So ideal block play space, what are you wanting to see there?
Well, funny that you should start with space because I'm scrolling through my master's thesis. If you actually look to the research, there is a range of suggestion of ideal space between 60 and 80 square foot for a group of 16 to 20 kids. Which is roughly 3 to 5 square feet per child. Now, Cartwright recommends 120 square feet, which averages 15 square feet per child. And Rifle simply states that it needs to be large enough for 3 to 5 children to build at the same time. So, okay, so really what that means in layman's terms is you need a lot of room. Yes. And what I think is an ideal suggestion is that you have a space for block play, your block carpet, but you become okay with blocks being able to be moved to other parts of the environment.
Yeah, that 120 square foot, that's 10 foot by 12 foot. Very simple math. Well, you probably didn't need me to do it for you, but that is...
And you don't want the carpet too thick because building on thick carpet is not, it's not a stable surface.
Correct.
So if you can have a floor, I know that's noisier, but.
Yeah, you want one of those kind of really level indoor-outdoor kind of carpets, yep. right? So most of what you would buy commercially, you know, or get installed as an indoor-outdoor kind of carpet, that's ideal because it doesn't have that plush and it's yes. not yeah. wobbly at the bottom.
Well, and the other thing you can do is pick up a 2 by 3 foot or bigger hunk of half-inch plywood and just have that it can go in the middle of the floor mm-hmm. as the building surface.
Lots of surfaces.
And then the crash goes onto the rug, so mm-hmm. that absorbs oh, a lot yep. of that noise, too.
Cool.
So I think ideally that's I like the suggestion of 3 to 5 kids building at the same time. Now you're going to take that with a grain of salt, right? Because, you know, depending on the year, the other thing we've talked about before is that we've noticed very informally that there's like the block center year and then there's a dress up year. So if this year you have more dress up play kids than block kids, then steal some of that real estate, right? Don't get locked and loaded into that. But you don't want kids piled up because that's going to lead to quote unquote behavior problems. That's going to lead to sharing issues. That's going to lead to frustration. So after the first couple of weeks of school, you're going to get a handle on whether or not what you've allotted for your block play needs to be what broadened or extended or shortened up.
Yeah, that's gonna.
But the rule of thumb is it needs to be a lot of space.
And that's gonna be that's a challenge.
That's
because,
a huge challenge.
A lot. I mean, classrooms are.
Small.
They're yeah. small. And mm-hmm. so.
But also, if once you really start to internalize the belief that you can meet most of your curriculum requirements and expectations through a well-equipped block center, you don't see it as it taking away space from other centers. You
yes.
start to put some of that other stuff
into the
block
play
area.
Yeah, because I think when it comes to blocks, and we can get into what to put in the block play area in a bit, but I think mm-hmm. Block play area and loose parts play go very well together. And so when you can create a block area and loose parts, there are a lot of loose parts that are also blocks. And so there's good stuff.
It needs to be, I think, an inviting space you want kids to be able to build and navigate around each other without a lot of stumble, trip, and fall drama. So I would tell our listeners, don't get locked and loaded necessarily on the square footage per se, because the reality is that most of the schools that we've all observed don't have that kind mm-hmm. of space. I mean, ideally, I mean, if it was Lisa Murphy's like Wave the Magic Wand, you would have a block room.
Yeah.
Like one entire room would be dedicated for the kids to be using the blocks. But that's, you know.
Yeah,
that's what I want versus how do we make it work with what we actually have?
Yeah, I'm thinking, you know, 20 foot by 30 foot room.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah. And so what blocks would you put in place? And what I see.
But building materials.
What I see is a very limited selection of blocks in a lot of programs I visit. Some of the programs I visit, some are very well equipped. But I think what we want to do is also provide as much variety as we possibly can. I love the maple unit blocks as a place to start.
It's a starting spot.
But they are.
You will not spend your money in a more better fashion.
Yes, exactly.
More gooder.
More gooder.
I think that's proper grammar.
I think you're right.
But yeah, they're an investment. They're not cheap, but they will last forever.
They will.
I visited programs that have had the blocks are decades and decades and decades old. The hollow blocks, the big wooden maple hollow blocks. Those are disappearing, I think, in a lot of programs because of the amount of space they take up.
The cost and the space and the maintenance. I mean, you gotta whip out what is that? It's a certain kind of seed oil.
Linseed
oil,
yeah. Periodically, and keep them lubricated, keep them moist, keep them.
We're talking about blocks. So in the research. And forgive me because this is the only center in the classroom that I'm going to be like, and according to the research, I mean, because this is what I just did my master's on. But what I found, I think my biggest like, oh my God, was the amount of suggested blocks in the research varied from 200 blocks per child. Could you imagine? You've got 20 kids in your class times 200. I mean, that's a lot of blocks. Down to 50 per child. Down to at least a full set, which is 644 blocks, which is 30 to 35 per child. But then when I did the average on all of the actual specific numbers that were suggested, it was about 95 blocks per child.
Is that per child in the room or per child in the space?
That was not clear in the research. My thought would be per the number of kids that would be building at the time, which I would then personally default to how many kids are in this space. Let's make sure all of that is available, whether or not there's three going in there or all of it. I would want to make sure that if today everybody wanted to be building, there was enough stuff. And that's really what it comes down to, you know?
I think in the last years of our family childcare program, we had a close to 400 blocks per child
that's
available
awesome.
At any one time. That's a damn mess.
Can I be four again and come back to your? That's a big mess.
A damn
that's
mess. Now,
well,
now,
and that's what a lot of people see. They don't see the construction. They see, oh my God, all of this through the room.
Yeah. Now, grandbaby has all of those, so it's like 1,400 to one or something like that. So it's good stuff.
And but these were like the wooden blocks, like what you were talking about. So that was the amount of like suggested per child, for the unit blocks, and then in addition to that were like the loose part materials, right? And we know that the research supports the importance of loose parts like junk and the buttons and tree slices and metal rings, strings, pebbles, keychains, spools, and supplementary materials in addition to loose parts are like kind of the traditional things. You see the cars and the people, you know, the transportation materials,
the animals,
that and the cars and trucks. Did I already say that?
Writing materials?
Oh, definitely. That was actually an interesting part of my research. Was I asked teachers whether or not they thought pens and paper should be in the block center, and an overwhelmingly large number said no. But I don't.
I've been asking that question too, and that's the
consensus
majority response I've been hearing too.
But then I wonder, is it because nobody's ever shown you how and why that would serve, or it's because at first glance you're like, well, no, that's not building stuff. But then you kind of you have that direct intervention then with an employee and say language literacy, make a sign, make a road, don't touch, and it's like, oh yeah, I guess.
Well,
let's draw it out.
Draw your building.
You did that real quick. Let's slow that down and unpack it for people that may be going writing utensils in the block area. They're going to rock the destroy it right in the block. The blocks are going to get destroyed. We just bought those blocks. We can't have. So those people take a breath, and we'll slow this down.
I get so excited. My question was whether or not they really just felt like, no, it doesn't belong here, or if you had a direct intervention, like if you'd sat them down and said, hey, let me show you the purpose that paper and pencils in a block center serve. And then there was that sense of, oh, making a sign or doing a road or a clipboard. And, you know, I'm in charge of directing the construction or drawing or somehow capturing sketching what I have produced. And my favorite is the don't touch or the please leave this up until tomorrow. And one of the programs started an actual communication system with the morning group and the afternoon group. You know, the morning group would write like, don't move my stuff. And then the afternoon group would write back to them and, you know.
And that's using language for a purpose and a lot more valuable than some of the stuff we talked about in the most recent Pinterest. In the most recent Pinterest episode. And so that stuff can be real, real valuable. I love the idea of being able to save your stuff. One thing that I've seen is having hula hoops available and that ring goes around the structure that they want to save. And then other kids, you learn
that's
the language
cool.
to the classroom. Mm-hmm. When a hoop is around something, we respect
that's
that and we leave that.
Here.
And I mean, that's if you're doing, I know it's hard in kind of family childcare settings when you've got mixed age groups and the 18 months olds are going to be.
Yeah. Or your play space is your living space once everyone goes home at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm. And so what I've been working on in the shop is a force field hula hoop. And what it will be is
awesome.
It's going to be great. It's just a basic hula hoop, but when you put it on there and click the remote, this force field goes up to the ceiling.
Ooh.
And it's just, you can change the color. It's LED. You can change the color of the force field based on, you know, the decor in your room.
Mine would be a unicorn just kind of protecting
it'd be prancing,
going around,
prancing around. Oh my gosh.
Going in a circular motion, just prancing unicorn.
Trademark on your idea. So we're going to have that now. It's going to slow the release of this a little bit, but then and what's going to happen is they'll just get a slight shock if they touch it,
like a dog collar.
Yeah, it's not going to be anything that'll do any damage. I mean, it's not taser powered, but it'll be enough to slow them down. So that'll be watch for that. We'll run commercials on the podcast when it's ready.
I love that.
And the other thing I've seen for the block area that works in family childcare, you know those baby gates, those circle expandable. things
that
like
are
baby
illegal
yards.
In most states.
Well, what I've seen is
that's a nice protective thing. Though.
Well, they will put the little ones will be on the outside. The big kids get to go in there with the blocks.
That's a great use of those.
It keeps the little ones out of away from the big kids that are trying to build with the blocks, and so. I think that's kind of a cool thing that I saw.
I think it's also, I want to say, in an ideal situation, since this is kind of our party and we get to kind of prescribe right now, a good reminder that blocks need to be allowed to be moved throughout the entire classroom.
Oh, yes.
Do you have something snarky to say?
No, I have. I was talking about this recently at a gig, and I said, I mean, essentially that, and I saw this woman, she's about six rows back, and her face just went white.
White.
And she's been with me up to this, but this is so far out of her comfort level because the blocks go other places, and it's going to make cleanup twice as long. And the blocks go in the block area, and the dramatic play stuff goes in the dramatic play area, and the science stuff goes in the science area, and when the stuff moves, and it was just... But we had a conference. I mean, I saw her tense up. I said, talk to me about that.
Yeah, I love doing that at the gigs. And sometimes you can tell by watching if they're going to be cool with that.
Yeah,
and be
exactly.
like, come on, what's going on right over there? You know?
Yeah. And she said, I get it. I mean, intellectually, I get it, but it's going to be hard. Mm. But she left, sounded like she was going to give it, you know, do what can you do, like we talk about. So she sounded like she was going to give it that test. So what else do we want in that area? Well, first, back to, before I interrupted, where do we want to let the blocks go?
Wherever the child needs them to go. Inside, outside. But you should have a separate set of blocks outside. You should have outdoor building materials.
The I think I've talked about it in other episodes, the neatest outside blocks. We talked about it when we were talking with Leslie Romanoff from Tacoma Park Co-op. They had one of their dads cut these huge, they were probably 10 inches square and 18 inches long log slice blocks, but he squared them up. So there's these big log rectangles, and each one of them probably weighed 15, 20 pounds. And they probably maybe 20 or 30 of them around. And they didn't get moved a lot, but they got moved, and it did take two kids to haul them and tote them. And so there's a lot of stuff you can do
heavy
with those
block
plates. Heavy work. That large body
And even
stuff.
Empty boxes. I mean, for what it's worth, you can go raid the liquor store and the grocery store and tell them what you do and ask them for empty cardboard boxes and throw some tape on the outside of them and stack up with them.
Yeah, one we always had fun with was Kleenex boxes, because early learning programs are always going through the Kleenexes.
Yep.
And so you save those boxes, and then you stuff them with newspaper to make them a little bit more rigid, and then you can wrap them with the clear packaging tape or even
duct tape to make them
pretty, and they're easier to wipe off that way, and they last a long time, and you get those big blocks, and there's a damn airplane. I called the airport last week and asked them if they could reroute the air traffic over town for a couple days while we podcasted on the deck. But
maybe it's somebody really
somebody
famous.
Somebody messed that up. Yeah, maybe it's. Well, we're all here.
Oh, that's true. Oh, yeah. So who else could have possibly?
Who else would be in Iowa? I mean, probably a presidential candidate going over. So what else we got with blocks?
Time. How much time they get in a block center?
20 minutes, and then the other group rotates in.
But I don't want to play.
He's watching
today.
My eyeballs pop out of my head.
Behind the shades.
Behind the shades.
I'm guessing they get as much time as they want/need.
And of course, that would be the ideal answer. Then the meet you where you are answer would be that, just as an FYI, that the research suggests a minimum of 60 minutes. And the research also suggests that the things that they build, which we've already said, needs to be allowed to stay up for an extended play period. And for those of you who are aligned with Eckers, I mean, you know that you will obtain a higher score in your block section evaluation if, in fact, there is a space for kids to work on projects, whatever that might be, multiple days in a row. So it's not like we're just telling you, we're not trying to inconvenience you. As I know your head right now, where you're like, oh my God, but that's where we do circle, you know? But I mean, what would be the worst thing that happened if you did circle like outside, or if you even didn't do circle at all today? I know. I mean, that we're getting into a slippery slope.
And so if blocks can go everywhere, I'm guessing, and I'm sure as we go through the series, this is something we're going to repeat over and over again, but other stuff can come to the blocks?
Other stuff can come to the block center. You might need something else in the block center.
What if I'm four and my name is?
Jasper.
Jasper. And I need the paint in the block area.
I have a very, very stock yet authentic response to that. Having done this now for almost 25 years, I know that somebody at some point is going to need to paint or glue. I thought you were going to say glue. And the response would have still been the same. I know going into it. So in my environment is all the scrap wood blocks that I've accumulated through the years that are not the blocks that we're using in the building section. So if you're needing to do some woodworking and some painting and some gluing, then that's the box over there that you can go pick from. So that it's right over there. What part of this can I say yes to? Yeah. You're wanting to do some painting of some wood? It's right over there. Go knock yourself out.
And for those of you who are worried about you let the writing utensils, the pencils and stuff into the block area and your fancy unit, expensive hard maple unit blocks are going to get ruined. They invented a long, long time ago, they invented something called sandpaper that is very effective at removing pen and pencil marks from wood. So might take a little bit of effort, but you can make them pretty again. And the other thing is, you may not want to keep them pretty. I love visiting programs where
it has a story behind it with that little mark or the drawing on it.
I think it's a phrase we used in a previous episode, that patina of play on the equipment.
And you know what? I think Tamar Jacobson made a comment when we interviewed her, and forgive me now because I hate it when I blurt it out and then I'm like, da, 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 da. But it was something about the child's story. Like there was something about the day that came out and it was captured there. And then when the children saw it again, it was that sense of, you know, that remember when this happened, and forgive me for blurting that out, but it became a part of the classroom culture.
There's value there.
One more thing about that a reminder that while we also want to make sure that children have time for building, they also need time for the deconstruction as well. And the deconstruction is different than cleaning up. You know, cleaning up does imply deconstructing and then putting things away. But if a child has built their own structure, that child gets first right of refusal on taking it apart. There's actually... It can be very psychologically, I don't want to say traumatizing because that's very overly dramatic, but the child who constructs it needs to be the child who either takes it apart his or her own self or gets to say, yes, you can knock it down. So we always facilitated kind of a, you know, can I knock it down? Like you had to ask, right? You know, just general politeness, exactly. Right? A common sense and courtesy. So if you're the boss of your building and you get to be the boss of knocking it down.
I totally agree. And that crash.
Oh, it's so cathartic.
Let's face it. A lot of times, the majority of times, the way that building comes down is not piece by piece.
No,
it's all at once. And that's a very, very powerful, powerful thing. I made this and I destroyed it. And that's a huge...
Creating and destroying.
A huge part of the process. And as far as the creation goes, I think, you know, I hear so often that how tall do we build in the block area? Well, you can't build over your head. You can't build above your waist, whatever it is. Because people worry so much about somebody getting hit by an errant block when
incident.
The block comes down. But you know what? You're going to get hit by a block, then you learn to stand back a little bit further the next time you knock the building down. I also think during that construction process, we need to allow them to feel powerful while they're building. Mm-hmm. I always got one of my favorite stories is the boys were building in our family program at one time, and they're just building this just tall, kind of straight up tower with these kind of flat blocks and these others, and they get up as high as they can reach, and we need to stand on a chair.
We
need to stand on a chair. There's these two guys, and we go, okay. And they build as high as they can standing on the chair.
Love it.
So, Jeff, can we stand on the table? And so they stand on the table, use the chair to get up on the table and build a little bit higher. We need to put the chair on the table.
I could just feel people cringing.
And so they've got one chair, and they step up on the table, and then up on another chair, and build a little bit higher. And then there's this long. They get as high as they can go, and they step back, and they're looking, and they come. So Jeff, we need the ladder.
We need the ladder.
And I said, do you need a 6-foot ladder or an 8-foot ladder?
And their eyes are like,
and, well, they paused for a moment, and then one of them said, how high is the ceiling? I said, well, the ceiling's about 9.5 feet. And he said, we need the 8-foot ladder.
Oh, my gosh.
And so we moved the table and the chairs out of the way real carefully.
Yeah.
And I got out to the garage and bring the ladder in. And they really worked until they could just barely slide that one last block in between the ceiling. And I said, okay, get out of the way so I can knock it down. Breaking the rule Lisa Murphy just explained to us. And they both look at me.
Like, how dare you?
And they said, we built it.
Uh-huh.
And I said, well, yeah, but you used
my ladder.
You used my ladder and my blocks and my chair and my table. And you're at my house. And I think I should get it to knock it down. And so we had this long, fun argument about it. And then one of them just kicks it.
Just shut that man up.
Just
kick it.
Just kicks the bottom level, and the whole thing comes crashing down.
I bet that was noisy.
It was noisy, and I think
are still finding blocks.
I think we all got hit with blocks, but it was awesome, and the power and ownership that they had, the control in that process is a big thing.
And your willingness to say yes.
Yeah, yeah.
That is probably the most commendable part of that story.
And so do we need ladders in our block areas? I vote yes.
Well, we need to have access to the block or to a ladder,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You know, access to a step stool, access, mm-hmm. and not only an access to the stuff, but an access to a willingness to
say
consider
yes to
what
it.
Part of this can I say yes to?
Yeah. I think one thing we didn't specifically touch on is books in the block area.
Oh, definitely.
I mean, we've got our literacy area, but
definitely.
I think there are specific books we might want to have all
books.
Time. The construction books, the architecture books. There are a lot of board books that have architecture in them.
And they don't have to be kid books. I mean, they could be like coffee table construction, you know, design books. It can be Pod Dog. It can be, it doesn't need to be a children's book.
And we've visited programs where there have been
blueprints.
I was going to say, yeah, the architectural drawings and blueprints. Mirrors are great in mirrored surfaces. The glass mirrors you might want to avoid, but there's all kinds of acrylic mirror options that you have. And putting those on the wall or on the floor. And so as you build up, you see your building also going down. Into the floor, and there's all kinds of fun things you can do. I've seen
measuring tape.
Yeah, tape measures, the yardsticks,
and regular tape.
And that's a great thing for kids. One thing I really like in is asynchronous blocks.
Meaning
our unit blocks are everything is
mathematically
square and all the corners are perpendicular and parallel. Asynchronous means that you're going off on different angles. And what that means is your building might start tilting another, you put that block. And so you've got to be a little bit more mindful how you place. So those natural blocks that are cut out of logs and branches, those kind of things, we purposely, the ones I make, I avoid putting that 90-degree angle on there because it's it's not a better building experience. It's a different experience.
Yeah. So it's like building on the sand, right? Not a perfectly flat level surface. You're going to have to use a whole different skill set to figure out how am I going to recreate that 9-foot structure I just did when my surface is all wobbly.
Yeah, we've done blocks on the water play table by taking pool noodles and cutting them into slices, block size slices, then building on the surface of the water because they float there
float
and they go up and kids have fun with that. So any more block area stuff we need to cover?
I think I'll give a plug to things like, you know, Dr. Drew's blocks and, you know, different kinds of building blocks that are out there, you know, that you can, of course, make yourself. You know, you can cut a tree down and make your own tree cookies and stuff like that. So various kinds of blocks. I like small blocks. I do like some of the Montessori, you know, blocks. They're not a big fan of you actually using them for building per se, but some of the the geometrical, you know, the spheres and the cones and the pillars and things like that I think those are nice additions. Some of the blocks that have the color like through it and the hollow blocks, but mm-hmm.
have liquid in them.
Yeah, or just changing
variation
the perspective.
Different.
I think that's what I like about that kind of stuff. So,
I really personally like a lot of the blocks on the Explorations Early Learning webshop.
Well, of course. I mean, I was going to plug you next.
I like to plug myself.
Okay, you plug yourself.
That sounds a little bit naughty.
Yeah.
But no, there's all kinds of, and go to your recycling bin, because anything.
Oh, yeah, corks.
Those wine bottle, corks.
Yeah, all that wine's a write-off now, people. Yeah, I need the cork.
And a lot of those uniform containers that you're always getting stuff, baby wipe containers, peanut butter jars, that kind of stuff can be saved. And anything that you get in bulk that's in uniform size can be turned into construction. And
think big stuff, too, maybe as a wrap-up here, too. You know, we're probably really adept at identifying traditional things to build with, but even things like PVC pipe and straw bales and stuff, you know, like things like non-traditional, bigger constructions. Mm-hmm. We used to roll up the newspapers on a dowel, and so there were these newspaper spears, and you could use those and assemble those and attach those. So I've started to think more constructing.
Yeah.
I like that word. It seems to open it more up than building, and I'm not sure why. That could just be me.
Yeah, and you mentioned tape. I think just for one of the tape uses, a lot of times kids, the building isn't staying up.
Mm-hmm.
But when you can take that 3-foot piece of masking tape and wrap it around there appropriately, your building goes the direction you want it to, and that can be a big help. Well, this has been the first in this new series. Hope you enjoyed it. We'll be back next Monday with another episode, and sometime in the future with another bit of this series. Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.
Having a hard time sleeping? Off your feed, feeling blah, blasé, down? Maybe you need more Lisa Murphy in your life. Check out ooeygooey.com and hunt her down on Twitter and Instagram. It'll make your life better.
One, two, three.
Hey, we're starting a revolution. A play revolution. A playvolution. Get it? Come on over and check it out at www.myplayvolution.com. It's an online community for parents and early learning professionals who want to chat and share information and talk and educate themselves and educate others about what's going on in the early learning profession. Let's face it, Facebook and Pinterest and Twitter aren't as warm and cuddly as we might like them to be. This is your community, a place you're going to help create. Come on over. Don't be afraid. Check it out. Jump in. Support the community. Be the community. We need you. Got it? See you there. Thanks for listening to the Child Care Bar and Grill podcast. If you like the show, check out our other offerings, Shots, Lisa's Book Report, and Tom Copeland's Taking Care of Business. And we'd love it if you shared them with friends, left a comment at myplayvolution.com, and gave them 5 stars on iTunes. Thanks. This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.
Oh.
Okay.